Hosting for this podcast is made possible through mtgcast.com, which is supported by a generous contribution from quietspeculation.com, Magic's premier trading and financial news site.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fifth episode of At Your End Stuff. I am Morgan, as you know, and we are here today with Jordan and Mike and Dave again. He actually came back. We didn't scare him off. It's amazing. And we're going to just go ahead and, as we usually do, get started right with our topics at this point in time. So the first thing that we want to talk about is we have some very exciting news, people. And as you know, a majority of the podcast was going to go to a PTQ down in Kentucky. And from what I hear, some pretty good things happened. Now, Dave, do you have some exciting news for our listeners?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had a decent day. It was all right.
Oh, that's good.
I managed to take down the PTQ. So
oh, my God.
It was okay.
Woo! So you heard that correctly. Our very own Dave Nolan is qualified for Pro Tour Theros.
Keep your shirt on, Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the pictures. It was pretty crazy. Unfortunately, I was not there to see the celebration. I was at a sign museum, which actually is awesome. Everyone should go visit the American Sign Museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Top notch. But, yeah, so we have a Pro Tour qualified player on our podcast right now, which is pretty awesome. And, you know, we really just wanted to focus on that and focus on the experiences that everyone had that day. Obviously, mainly on Dave's journey, going from, you know, the start to finish of the PTQ. So, you know, whoever wants to start off with the discussion, I'll let you guys take over. And so, whoever wants to take it from here.
Let's save Dave for last, because that seems like that's the most enjoyable.
I mean, everyone wants to wait for the money shot, right? I mean...
I want to quickly say, we played the PTQ at Something to Do Games.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a great game store. The owner, whose name escapes me, she was awesome. And did not kick Jordan out for taking his shirt off, which was, I mean, a big deal.
That's a max god right there.
It was just pure celebration.
But, had a disappointing day myself. I ended up 5-3, but I got my second loss pretty early. Had sort of an awkward moment round two. Still playing Naya. And actually had a lot of enjoyment this week. I got to talk to Mr. Scotty Mack from the A-Team and from Compulsive Research. We got to share sideboard notes and everything, and I felt like a giddy little schoolgirl, you know.
Look at you. Look at you name dropping.
Hey, you know, not that well. No, we had someone in our group go through Scotty Mack, so that's a thing.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
So, played against a Jund player, round two, who I had played in Columbus. And he drew the nuts on me game one, and game two, mulled the five, and just, you know, it was a really good game. He had a blow up for me one turn with a bonfire. And after the match, he was talking sideboard with me. And apparently he asked me about the sideboard stuff when I beat him in Columbus. And I told him how I board out voices. Because pillars, you know, I want to blank their pillars because they board them all in, and it makes that matchup miserable. Well, he remembered and boarded much better against me and saw three of his board cards to kill me in game two. So I was like, oh, you're not drawing pillars anymore.
There you go. How dare you share your secret?
So I'm like, I don't know. I actually talked to my wife about that. I'm like, should I not tell? Like, I don't know. Like, it's in my nature, I guess, to just, like, bullshit with people afterwards. But she's like, no, you know, don't be an ass. Like, if they get you, they get you. I'm like, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I guess the fact that...
No, fuck you.
I mean, the fact that 2 weeks later this guy was like, I remember this guy, he kicked my ass. I mean, I guess that's kind of nice, but... Right. And then I lost to a Junk Aristocrats player the next round who... Like, he should have beat me easily. Like, I didn't have an answer for a Blood Bear in game three, and he just sat on it and didn't do anything. And I, like, literally just, like, drew the... Like, Blood Artist. Oh, Blasphemous Sect. Oh, I guess I win. And I was, and, like, literally that's how it went. I was just like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, I don't know what to do there. So it was frustrating. Managed to come all the way back. Ended up losing my last round. Took 34th out of a tournament that paid the 32nd. Awkwardly enough, beat Ban Hexproof twice.
That is weird.
I couldn't beat Jund, which I have a really good matchup against, unless I'm playing against Jordan. But I just beat Hexproof, twice. So it was a weird kind of day. I was glad, and I don't mean this cheekily, Jordan, but we had some other people in the group who didn't do as hot early on. I was glad I was at least playing meaningful games later, because Dave took forever.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Sorry, guys.
You start out the PTQ 0-3, and you essentially pay $25 to walk around a mall. When your friend wins it, you're happy and elated, and that's awesome. But holy hell, do you want to go home at 1 o'clock? I mean, I think I made the joke once to Dave after he won. I was like, if you would have lost, you know how mad I would have been at you? Like,
I think that's a joke. I think we all would have killed him.
Yeah, like he would have been sad, tilted from losing. And he would have been like, guys, I just want to talk about that match or whatever. I'm like, no. No, you get your ass outside and start walking. It's a long way back to Columbus.
I'm pretty sure it would have been riding in the trunk on the way back. So
you'd be like me in the vehicle. I mean, that's just...
Yeah, you're paying everybody's gas. Like, that's... Whew. But no, it was cool. I mean, I didn't do very hot, as you said. Anyway, sorry to cut you off, Mike.
No, it's fine. Overall, I was still very happy with the deck. Dave and I both tried out Rolling Templar on the board. Brian Kibler suggested it against the Hexproof match. Beat Hexproof twice, never cast the card. So Dave said it worked a lot better for him. I never played against Red Green Aggro either, which is
that's strange. So now with Ban Hexproof, did the deck defeat itself a lot of the time? Did you see
I've really changed my board plan against them and gone like try to go super aggressive and bring in Boros Charms to counteract their fogs.
Oh yeah,
and this is and it's different what I was doing before. I don't know. I get a little attached to cards. I think so. Like I look at Dominaraid and I'm like, oh, Dominaraid. But honestly, it's just so bad in that matchup. So I totally changed how I boarded, and I actually won on a Moldavive round one against it in game three, all based off of double striking a Gorklan Rampager, locks it on Smiter for 16.
Jesus Christ!
Oh, so goodness. Like,
so wait, you weren't playing the, you were swinging for 16 with a creature, and you weren't playing the Ban Hexproof deck. That's interesting.
that's how I got him. And then the second matchup, I think he lost to himself kind of the one game, but like everyone thinks we're on Bonfire, like the Naya player. So I had both players in game one walk right into an overloaded Visium Wars and just get totally wrecked. So like they can't really come back from that. The game three against that opponent, he drew the non-hexproof side of his deck, so he had like String Root Geist and Loxodon Spiders, which are infinitely easier to deal with.
And
Unflinching Courage is just a house. I mean, that's all I can really say. That card's insane.
Good card. All right. Now, Jordan, did you want to recount your story?
It was whatever. Like, it was pretty upsetting, to be honest, for the first little bit. Went 0-3, lost to the Junmir because I played pretty bad. Mm-hmm. I played a Vampire Nighthawk in the open field to an Olivia Voldaren, and I had to play a dude and like to live, and I was just like, this one's good, and he was like, okay, end of turn, steal it, and I was like, awkward, and he was like, yeah, I missed a couple of triggers that game on my Deadbridge chain. It was just horrible. Then I lost to Ban Hexproof when it just went off, and then when that deck just goes off, you don't really have much of a say. So 0-3, not very happy about it. I got to know that mall very well. me and another guy in the group who didn't do very well, we took a good tour of that mall. It's not a mall for adults. It's a kid's mall, man. So we got pretty bored pretty quick. I drank like three large Starbucks coffees. I got two subs. Like, I just got so bored. I was like, well, I can go stand in line at Subway. So... that was my day. I'm really happy that my friends did well, though. I'm really happy that Dave won, obviously. That was pretty sweet. It was pretty cool to be watching that level of a tournament and then actually care about the results. So that was fun. The store venue was fantastic. Like, the store itself was fantastic. It was weird because we played in the hallway of the mall, like a main part of the mall. So that was weird because there was just tables in the middle of the hallway and people were walking by.
That was hilarious, actually, because you saw the mom was like bringing their teenage daughters in, and like you had two types of people. you had like the teenage daughters who were like, no, don't stop and look at all these creepy men. And then you had the boys, like the you know, 10, 11, 12, who are like seeing the game store and seeing all these people, and they're like, ooh, and the mom's like, no, you will not live this lifestyle.
I can't, as a parent, lead you down this path.
Just like drag them through. They won't make eye contact with anybody. It's just like, ugh.
Well, I've told you about at one of the local stores, there was a lady that came in with her son to buy him a video game, and it's like game day or whatever, and she goes, this is why you need to watch your diet and exercise. So you don't look like these people. And we're like, whoa, lady, like, get out of Dodge. But yeah, that's pretty much accurate. That's why you need to.
it's fairly accurate.
Yeah, she was not wrong.
But she was a bitch.
Yes, correct. You're not wrong either. But it was a good day. I'd like to think it was pretty good. I think everybody had fun. Honestly, the best part of the day was the BW3 celebration dinner afterwards.
That was awesome. Oh, man. I don't think wings have ever tasted better.
The whole thing of where, like, the best part, so it was a 4-hour drive from Central Ohio to Louisville where the PTQ was. And the best part was somebody asked how much time was left, and I said 2 hours and 30 minutes, and it's like 3 o'clock, and like all the 5 grown men in the car moaned, like groaned, like adults just went, ugh. And like, it was the best because you're a grown man complaining about how much time's left in the car.
Are we there yet?
Yes, we did. Like, I check my phone every 10 minutes, and like, it was horrible. But that's why it would have been even worse if Dave loses in the finals. Like,
oh, God.
I'm getting home at 5 o'clock for you to have half a box of Dragon's Maze. Oh God, I'd have bought you half a box if I would have known. Like.
Oh, yeah, the worst part about getting back that late was that I left the keys to my apartment at home. So we're rolling up at like, you know, 4:45 in the morning. And I had to do like the, I guess not the walk of shame, but the call of shame where I had to like call my wife like, oh, hey, I know you're sleeping. Can you let me in?
Right on. You have to preface it even better because what was your wife's reaction when you said you won the Pro Tour at midnight?
Her reaction was, how are we going to pay for that?
So this wasn't a happy
wife.
It was like, sure, I'll open the door, you're a winner. It was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Not again. What the fuck do you think you're doing? Just winning tournaments? We're not made of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. The PTQ, like, winning a PTQ is actually financially, like, you have to think about it. Because you're like, it's going to be expensive to go there. You're obviously going to want to spend a ton of money. Like, so like, yeah, I want a tournament. So I need to save $600. Like,
to be fair, she knows her husband's propensity for drinking. That's what her fear is. Like, you're going where? Without me? Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I am drinking a Guinness right now in preparation, so.
Gotta start getting my resistance built up.
Yeah. All I just want to give you some money to get me some souvenirs. So
yeah. About everybody I've told has said that to me. So I'm just going to come back with like just a suitcase full of glasses and like
potatoes.
Whiskey, basically.
I want a potato. All
right, you know, I'll get you one from Meyer.
Oh, wow.
Wait all a right. second, this is all right on it, you bastard!
I know my potatoes.
So the time has come. So Dave, please recount us with your tale of the PTQ.
Okay. Sure. Well, I played the same deck that I played at the Star City Open in Columbus, which is a 4-color reanimator. So basically everything except blue. My list was a little different than, I guess, the standard list that's out there. It's got 4 Farseeks and, plays Hunt Masters and stuff. So it kind of, not as reliant as on the graveyard interactions, but I liked the deck a lot. It was really good at the Star City Open, and so I changed 2 cards for the tournament, and it was really smooth all day. Really liked the deck. It's a lot of fun to play. It's really powerful. I think it matches up well against most of the format. Luckily, I didn't play against any Bant Hexproof because I don't think that matchup's that good.
Mm-hmm.
I played against, I made some notes here. I played against 3 red-green aggro decks, 2 Esper decks, mono red, and my only loss in the Swiss was to a Bant control deck. Mm-hmm. And that match was pretty sweet, even though I lost. I still actually had a lot of fun. It was game one took 41 minutes. So, and it was a very back and forth game. I actually thought I had it. So I get near the end of the game, and I played an Angel of Serenity to pretty much wipe his board out. And then he responded by activating his, what's the blue-green land that lets you play?
Alchemist Refuge.
Yeah. So he activates Alchemist Refuge, plays his own Angel of Serenity as an instant, takes my angel into Thragtusks, and then, I'm at 15, and he had exactly, 13 mana to pump his thing with Wolf Run on the next turn. So he took me out in one fell swoop there. So, you know, I didn't have enough time to come back and win that one, but I mean, for the rest of the day after that match, I lost one game.
So good.
Sick. So no games in top eight, right? You didn't lose a single one.
Yes, I swept through the top eight, didn't lose a game.
Insane.
Yeah, I mean, I to be honest, I mean, I did a little bit of scouting. You know, I was able to ID in round eight, so you know, there were a couple of matches that had to play it out, so I was kind of you know, looking to see what was out there, and then once I saw what everybody was playing in the top eight, they were all, you know, pretty favorable matchups or really good matchups for me, so I thought I had a really good chance to take it down. And then, you know, with all you guys waiting around for me, I felt like I really needed to take it down, as you said, so, yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, I thought I played well throughout the day. You know, I didn't play perfectly by any means. You know, definitely made my share of mistakes, but definitely when it came to top eight, I thought I tightened up pretty well, and I was definitely locked in, you know, in top eight. So,
yeah, I think you talked about how well you played. Let's talk about how bad your opponents played. how many missed triggers do you think that you got in your favor on Saturday?
Well, the ones that I could remember were, against an Esper opponent, I had a Huntmaster in play. He evil twinned it. And then, on my next turn, I didn't have any other plays, so I passed so I could flip my Huntmaster. And he could have responded by using the evil twin ability to kill it, but he just put his guy in the yard. And then I had a flipped Huntmaster. So, that worked out well.
Oh man.
And then later on, actually, in the win, it turned out to be the winning in round seven. My opponent had two Boros Reckoners in play, and then my board was two Thragtusks and a Boros Reckoner. I was tapped out, so he attacks with both of his Reckoners. I block my Reckoner on one of his guys and let the other one come through. He gives his Reckoner first strike, so okay, we let first strike damage resolve, and I put three damage on the other Reckoner that was coming in. And he just picks it up, puts it in his graveyard, moves on with his turn. I kind of look around a little bit. I'm like, all right.
That's the best. He did this little head shake. And like, he tried to look over his shoulder at me for a second, and he just kind of quickly looked down, and I had to leave because I was laughing. I was just like, that's why that card's good. Well, like, a 3-3 for 3 is pretty okay, I guess, unless he has one of his own, and that kills mine. What? Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, I think my opponent might have been a little nervous, so.
What a Jobin.
Yeah. Yeah,
hey,
I don't know
what
happened.
We've all made mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, it happens, man. And then, yeah, actually in the finals there were a couple of, I guess, misplays by my opponent that I definitely was able to capitalize on. One of them was just a Borrowers trigger that didn't end up mattering. But the other one was a pretty interesting play that I think not a lot of people would understand. I guess it's kind of, I guess it's semi complex.
Let's break it down.
Yeah. All right. So the board is, I'm terrible at remembering the exact things, but, he had a Cartel Aristocrat and a Zealous Conscripts in play. Mm-hmm. And then my board, I believe, was a Thragtusk, a Huntmaster, and a Wolf Token.
It was a Thragtusk and an Angel of Serenity.
Okay. All right. Well, even better. So he taps out and he plays a Blasphemous Act. And I'm like, so I'm just sitting there, and I paused purposely because I thought that he was going to respond by giving his Aristocrat Pro Red. So I sit there and I pause, and I waited a good 10 seconds, and he just kind of looks at me, and he's not saying anything. So I just, eventually I say, okay, resolves. So I start scooping up my creatures, put them in the graveyard. And then he says, okay, I'll sacrifice my conscripts to get my graveyard red. And I said, well, that doesn't work that way. Because he passed priority to me, I passed back, spell resolved, he can't do that, but he didn't understand how that worked. So mm-hmm. I think that put him on tilt, I think, for the rest of the game, which it was game two, and I ended up taking it down mm-hmm. shortly thereafter. But he wasn't too happy with it. I don't know if he thought I was trying to scum him out or anything, but I tried explaining it to him after the match, you know.
Which may be actually the one worst time to do it.
Well, no, because we were kind of talking about it, you know, like.
Oh, okay, okay.
I told him, and like, you know, no hard feelings. But I mean, it's finals of a PTQ. I'm not going to let it go. It's, you know, this is FNM or anything.
No time machines.
No, and absolutely. I mean, if it's FNM, like, I'd probably be like, okay, yeah I know what you meant.
Yeah.
But, you know.
No.
Well, you had a judge sitting there, and the judge agreed with you. Like, you said, you're past priority. The judge was like, you did pass priority. Like, that was the whole interaction. Like, so it's not mm-hmm. like you were like, nuh-uh. Like,
right.
Cards work the way they're supposed to, and he just didn't know how it worked.
Exactly.
And I think I mentioned, too, I mean, this is kind of what we talked about last week with, you know, how Modo kind of teaches you all these little things. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if he had played some matches on Modo with that deck and, you know, maybe done that interaction, he would know how that worked, you know what I mean?
Exactly. The time it was, right?
So that's just one of those things that, you know, that could come up in a game. So, I mean, honestly, those are the types of things that you need to know, you know, if you're going to be on the Pro Tour because, you know, everybody's so good. You need to know, you know, all the options.
Minute things.
Mm-hmm. Wait, do you need to know those things? All right.
All right, right.
Well, you made a good point too. You were like you said, you're like, oh, well, that guy is clearly just not ready. I think your quote was, he's not just ready for the big time.
No, prime time.
prime time. Because like, and it's a funny way to say it, but the same way you're correct, like, at the Pro Tour, if something like that happens, the guy's not gonna go, oh yeah, you're right, I knew you meant to protect your dude, you didn't make a play mistake. Sorry, like, LSV's not gonna care. You know, like, so yeah. I totally hear what you're saying, and like, knowing what your cards do is a big deal, and like,
yeah, it's huge.
Awkwardly happened at the worst possible time.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but, I mean, like I said, I mean, I felt like I was so locked in, and like, I tried to stay like as even keel as possible throughout the top eight, and then at the end of the game, he tapped out, he played a couple creatures, he had no cards in hand, I had Angel Serenity in my hand and Lethal on board, and then that was just the moment that I knew I had it, and like, it's just awesome. I don't even know how to describe it. It's just like, wow, I'm going to the Pro Tour again. And, man, it's just had my own little cheering squad behind me. So
shirts were removed. We've seen
shirts were removed and waved
that
around.
That picture will be in the show notes, by the way.
Oh man, it's so good.
That moment you're talking about, Dave, was awesome because he was just like a. Like, just stoic the entire time, like, just playing the game. And then that last turn where he drew his card, like, I watched him almost drop the card because his hand's shaking, and I'm like, oh, God. He's dropping the ring in the spaghetti plate, man. Like, he's like,
I didn't even notice that. So, I know that the top eight was recorded. There was somebody there that was actually recording the matches.
Yeah, we'll link that too. We don't know when that's going to be out, but Klatz Productions is what he called it, like, called this little thing. But yeah, it was recorded.
I think it's Klatz Productions, but yeah, I'll have to go back and watch that because I don't remember that. It was all kind of just like, oh God, that point. But
that's crazy.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, you know, I think I said when they first announced the Pro Tour schedule, and I saw that they were having a Pro Tour in Dublin, Ireland, I'm like, man. That's the one I got to qualify for if I'm ever going to play on. Because, like, I've just always wanted to go to Ireland my whole life, and if I had to pick one place on Earth to visit, that it would be that. And
oh, man. I mean, there's so much, like, I imagine, because, now, are you originally from Boston, like, born and raised, or?
Yeah, born and raised in the Boston area.
Right, and there's so much heritage from that area that comes directly from Ireland.
Right.
Like, that's got to be huge.
Right, and I'm kind of a mutt, I mean, as far as...
Yeah, right. But not necessarily even, like, your own personal heritage, but just being around that area and how influenced it was.
Right,
is.
Right.
So, I imagine, you know, you kind of always had that in the back of your mind, growing up and stuff.
Right.
Man, no lie, like, that story was kind of, like, inspiring, and, like, if I had feelings, I'd bring a tear to my eye.
Yeah, but we stomped those out of you.
Man, I just, like, this kid who just always wants to go to Ireland, and what gets him there? This game.
Yeah, it might have got a little too real there, guys. Sorry about that. Let's go back to dick jokes.
We'll call Dave the Fresh Prince of Dublin.
Yeah, well, we're getting a little too sappy. So Dave played idiots all day and happened to get lucky and win a pro tour qualifier.
No, I want to talk about that because Dave, you said you were locked in the top eight. And like now, to preface this, and we talked about this a little bit last week too. But Dave is damn good player. Been on the pro tour before, and we get to like cube and like I've got like one of the reasons I think I'm a better player is because you know of playing around with Dave and like we just like watch Dave like oh yeah this play and we're like oh right yeah you saw that.
Right.
And, like, so we, all of us who were in the car, there were five of us total, including Dave, are, like, all stationed around the room watching Dave play. And, like there were certain plays in the finals where literally, like, we're, like, he's, like, making a play. But one of them specifically was playing an Angel Serenity and then fishing through his opponent's graveyard to take his Fiend Hunter out to make sure his opponent couldn't bring it back with Umbrella Rites. And, like, it was one of his opponent was playing with his graveyard concealed, essentially. It wasn't, like, fanned out.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're sitting on the top eight of something. Like I know that like the first time I was sitting in the top eight, like TCG last year, like you got a little shaky. You know what I mean? You're like, oh man, you know, there's money on the line here or something else. Or like he's just like, oh yeah, I have to do this so I don't lose. And we are just like around the room, we're like sending up smoke signals to each other, like, oh my god, did you see that? That was insane. Like, and it was watching some of the tightest play I've seen, and just plays that are just so like. Like, he hadn't looked at the graveyard. Like, Dave, you hadn't looked at that graveyard in a bunch of turns. And, like you play the Angel Serenity, and that was your immediate plan. Like, there wasn't having to check every turn, and, like you knew your line of play for multiple turns, and you crushed it. Like, that your opponent wasn't even in the game. Like, it was just, inspiring. Like, that, and we all geeked out a little bit.
Yeah, I think the thing I said was, like, I knew Dave was good, but I never knew, like, how. You know, like, I just knew he made a couple of pro tours, and, like, that makes you good, right? You can't be bad and do that. But to just see you, like, absolutely demolish a guy, and it looked not close, was pretty insane. Like, I was like, oh, God. Like, and yeah.
I mean, it's amazing what happens when you get to practice with a deck.
Yeah,
no, I mean, like, honestly, I mean, like, that's, you know, kind of what I was saying last week. I mean, I don't get that much time to play that much. You know, I maybe get once a week. So a lot of times for Constructed anyway, maybe I'll get a couple games in or I pick up a deck that I like. But, you know, this deck I actually did get a lot of matches in with. I definitely felt comfortable and like, especially with my sideboard plans, like I knew exactly what to do in every matchup. And that was awesome because, you know, I'd be done sideboard. I'm already shuffling my deck and my opponent's like, oh, what do I do against this crazy deck I never seen? So I definitely felt like that gave me a huge advantage throughout the day too.
That is fantastic, and I mean that's just great. You know, it comes on our podcast, goes Spike's PTQ.
Well, yeah, obviously, it was the podcast. It was the magic.
It was definitely. Are you kidding me?
The at your input bump.
Yeah, it was like he was trying to be modest last week, and I was like, no, man, you still got it. And then he just took those words and ran with it.
Yes, I was very inspired by your words, Morgan. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. In my cards, so I'm glad they were good to you.
Yeah, thank you for the Huntmasters.
They don't win for me, but they win for other people. Other people beat me with them, Mike.
Hey, I supplied half of Dave's mana base. I don't know what he's talking about.
That's true. It was a joint effort. Once. Jordan, what did you do?
I drove.
Okay, well there you go. We all brought Dave to this precipice.
Yep. Hey, if you guys want to have me on before the Pro Tour too, then feel free. <last week. laughs>
you can be on until the Pro Tour.
Who's this Dave Nolan guy from Ohio that is literally undefeated at the Pro Tour? Like, that's what we call the at your instep bump.
Oh yeah. All right. So, you know, needless to say, everyone had a good time at the PTQ. I'm sad that I didn't go, especially when that happened, but. You know, it was just Dave's time, so I didn't want to interfere. But you know, it kind of brings us straight into our question of the week this week, which is, you know, what is the best way to fend off fatigue at long tournaments? I mean, you know, we're having, you know, PTQs that are 8 rounds long, you know, opens that are 10, GPs that are 15. You know, how do you deal with with you know, the fatigue of all this magic, not only the mental fatigue, because obviously it is a very, you know, strenuous game, but, you know, the actual physical fatigue, as I'm sure all you guys felt throughout the day, and especially Dave, who had to play through all the rounds. So definitely want to start off with you guys, being that you've had the most recent tournament experience. So let's kind of just dive in, and whoever wants to take the question can.
I guess I'll pick it up, because I feel like I thought I had the same, like, answered well, and there's, like, a lot of very generic articles, like, you should do, you know, make sure you sleep, don't forget to eat, and it's like, yeah, okay, you know what I mean? But, like, mm-hmm. So, like, we didn't get home till like, 5 in the morning, and we were all trying to stay awake on the ride home, because, you know, Jordan's trying to drive, you know, we don't want to die. so then I got home, my wife was nice enough, even though I walked in at 5, to let me sleep till about noon. But then, like, I went and did stuff with her all day, and I felt all right. And then I started getting a headache Sunday night. I woke up Monday morning, and I felt like I had a hangover. Mm-hmm. Like, my back was sore. I was like, oh, my God. I'm like, okay, I did something wrong here. Now, staying up 24 hours in a row, which is almost what we did, is probably a part of that. But, like, I definitely try to stay hydrated. I know I don't always eat the best stuff. Like I'm guilty of just being like, oh, I'm just going to slam this candy bar, knowing that, like, it's just like eating a giant sugar turd, and that's not going to really help that much. But
that's a horrifying image, just so you know.
Come on, doo-doo, baby.
Makes my doo-doo sparkle. Oh, man. But, like, I don't know. Like, I know that, like, I'm guilty of, like, not sleeping the night before, and I know a lot of people in our group are. I remember when we went to GP Pittsburgh. We were sitting around at 2 in the morning as one of the guys was, like, trying to put together a deck, and it's like, this is how you... no, it wasn't GP Pittsburgh. I'm sorry. That was the Invitational for TCG, mm-hmm. but whichever, though. Do you remember that, Dave? Like, we're up at 2 in the morning, and
oh yeah,
one of our friends is trying to, like, oh, yeah, we're going to do this. It's like, this is not how you should win a tournament.
No, we had no chance.
I mean,
it was actually the worst idea ever.
It was bad. So, like, I mean, beyond, like... So, I'll ask you two this, then, because I feel like I failed this weekend. Beyond just, like, again, sleep, eat... stay hydrated. What else can you do?
I mean, I like to get out and, like, maybe go get some fresh air, definitely. I mean, especially if you're in these stores or, like, even in a convention center. I mean, you can get... It's just gross in there. I mean, after a while, it's just, you know, you just start to feel gross. Like, so I just got to get outside, get some fresh air.
We were all gross this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way to avoid it, really.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I mean, for the PTQ, I brought, like, a bag of almonds that I was just kind of snacking on throughout the day. And, you know, there's definitely been times before where I've gone, you know, maybe throughout almost the whole tournament without eating. And then by those late rounds, you're just, like, so sluggish, you can't even really think straight. There's really no way to, you know, if you want to win the event, you got to stay sharp.
Yeah, I definitely learned that lesson this year, for sure, in, like, my competitive Magic playing time or whatever. I was in round, like, 10 of the... Or was it round 9 of the TCG 5K we had a couple of months ago now? And, like, it was a win and in for top 32. It had been my first cash. And, like, I just couldn't focus. Like, I was getting lightheaded during the game 3. And, like, I almost lost just because I was just ready to go, you know, scoop it up. I need to go take a nap. So after that, I definitely learned, like, I completely agree with Dave, going outside and taking a 5-minute walk, if you can bear the smoker smell, it's totally worth it. I mean, I obviously don't care about smoke stuff, so if you do, maybe you go to another exit, but, getting outside and smelling something other than the stale, dank air is, definitely the best. Eating, obviously, like, that's really cliche, but it's definitely really important. Like, get a sub, bring a sandwich. Bring something that's not magic related. I think one of the best things we do is we play Cards Against Humanity in between rounds, and it takes your mind off the game. Mm-hmm. And
right.
Or bring your phone and just, like, play around on Reddit or whatever, because if you're just sitting there thinking about magic, you play around in magic, and then for the next 40 minutes or whatever, you just think about the game. You're going to drive yourself crazy. Bring something not this game. Bring Game of Thrones on Season 3. That's what you should do.
You're asking us when we have 4 years. Nice. I have to figure, I brought my Kindle to an event now. I don't do it as much anymore because I end up going with a group like you guys, and I kind of interact with you guys. But I've been guilty of, like, going and sitting in a corner, like, reading. I do it a lot after I have a bad round. Like, if I feel like I punted or I'm, like, really tilted, like, I don't even want to talk to you guys. I just want to, like, go and, like, calm down so I don't, like, you know, kill a baby or something.
And I think that's important. I definitely, obviously, you know, it, eating, keeping hydrated, you know, go to water, don't, you know, go there, drink, you know, obviously we're all guilty of, like, going, waking up at the ass crack of dawn for these events and slamming an energy drink, but, you know, after that, you know, stick to water, because that's always going to make you feel the best as far as that goes. Snacks, you know, stuff that's actually good for you, or provide you some nutritional value until you can actually get a meal into you is usually the best. You know, and, just making sure you stay on top of that. And I think going with friends in general, like going with people that you know and can converse with, is a huge thing as well, because you don't feel so alone and isolated. And I think that has helped me, in all honesty, with playing in these big tournaments is knowing people and being a part of the community. You know, once you start to be a part of the community and actually have people that go with you, you can, you know, talk about Magic after your rounds if you want to, but you can also talk about other things, and you have friends, and like you feel, you know, a part of something bigger than yourself, and you don't necessarily, you're not inside your head all day. And I think that's a huge thing as far as that goes. So if you're going to, you know, want to avoid being fatigued at these tournaments, I think, like, going with your friends and, like, just having them lift your spirits up is like, a huge thing. And, like, you know, the Cards Against Humanity is pretty big with us just for the sheer fact that it makes us laugh in between rounds. And, you know, no matter if you had a good round or a bad round, like, you're going to laugh at Cards Against Humanity, and you're going to be, it's going to help you get energized and rejuvenated for the next round of Magic.
It's so much fun. Celebrities want to play it.
Exactly. We have celebrity rounds, so, you know. You know, if we see you guys, you know, and you're clearly fans of our podcast for some reason, you know, we'll walk up to you and be like, do you know who we are? And, you know.
Oh, you know who I am.
All right. Yeah. And if you do know who we are, you've made a grave error.
This is Dave Nolan, PT Theros competitor. Oh, gosh. You're a moron.
Yeah, for real. Like, if anybody out there is at any kind of event around Ohio-ish, you can probably find us just by following all the laughter from or a crowded
laughter,
table.
Laughter, terrible curse words, racism, yeah. It's all there. I mean,
yeah. It's oh, yeah.
No big
it's
deal.
Total package.
I mean, it's all in good fun. It's not for cereal, right?
What?
Right.
Sure. You are correct.
Oh, God. but no, I think, I mean, it's just hard. The more tournaments you go to, the better you get at it, though, at avoiding fatigue and getting tired. But sleep is huge. Like, don't think that you can go to your F&M and be there till 1 o'clock in the morning and get up at 5 o'clock and, you know, spike a PTQ, because it probably isn't going to happen. You're going to want to at least get, you know, 7 to 8 hours of sleep. That's going to be the ideal.
The other, I mean, we had our friend Rich there this week who slept at the tournament.
Yeah, Dave's in top 8, and then like I go to sit down at a seat next to him so that I can watch Dave better, because we're trying to give Dave some space. But like when I pulled the chair, it didn't move, and Rich is just planted on the chair, head in hand, out. Yeah. Oh, it looks like I'm sitting by Dave.
he is notorious at sleeping though at tournaments. I always feel like I catch him some Z's.
But, oh, that was so funny.
But I mean, it's huge, and like that'll improve your game, because like you have to imagine that a lot of the people there that are irresponsible and will want to test just to quell their worries and their concerns about their deck, and they're not going to want to go to sleep because it's a big, you know, it's a nervous thing for them. So they're going to get like 5-6 hours of sleep. If you get seven or eight, you know, you get your standard amount of sleep so that you don't die at an early age. You will be already heads above the competition there, because you've rested your body in preparation for your long 10-hour, 11-hour, 12-hour, 24-hour day of Magic. And then, like, I mean, that's just a huge thing.
I think also having breakfast at IHOP is definitely a big advantage, too.
You should have seen that, yeah.
Cinestacks, I'm throwing it out there. Gotta throw a shout out to Cinestacks at IHOP. Made all the difference.
You know what, there's a story there with the IHOP. We had the best waiter at IHOP, and we needed to go so fast. We had like 8.5 minutes to eat at IHOP, and this waiter was so sweet and like slow and caring. And we were like, dude, you're awesome, but you need to hurry the hell up. Like, it was the funniest thing ever because he was great. It was just funny how we had to handle it.
So I want to ask you, Jordan, like, so staying on topic here. Yeah. So, yeah, no, don't apologize. So, unfortunately, like I said, you went 0-3. You drove.
Sure.
You definitely, I know you were up early. I know you were at Dave's early because I was trying to get you to go and, you know, knock on his door. do you feel that you were at a disadvantage? Like, were you already, like, tired when you sat down for round one?
I hate to blame it on that, you know what I mean?
But I'm giving you a cop-out. I mean, you have a chance.
Yeah, no, I think, well, because we met at Dave's at 7:30, and I live 30 minutes from Dave. So I was up at 6:15-ish, and then it was kind of a stressful drive down because of the time difference, and then IHOP was a little slower than we were expecting. So I was kind of stressed out. I don't know about tired. I think I was more on the adrenaline, like I just went 85 part of the way to Louisville, and I'm not comfortable going over 70. So like, I was like,
such an old man.
I don't know. Like, I was paranoid, and then like, I'm like, yeah, I'm going 80, and Dave's like, I see 77. So, you know, I would say I was a little tired and I was a little stressed out. I would hate to blame it on that, obviously, but at the same time, like, maybe there's something to that. I don't know. But I guess that goes to show how important, like, actually being rested is. Man, we can't all be rich and literally sleep the car ride there and the car ride back.
It's so loud. I don't even know how he slept. Like, yeah. We were, like, shaking the windows, and he's like...
Yeah, he does that, too.
We're screaming the Book of Mormon soundtrack, and he's just, like, out, and he wakes up and goes, oh, where are we? What? Like, he slept the whole way back, not close. Like, we'd stop in front of Dave's house, he goes, are we peeing? Like, what? No, you're peeing in your car when you go home. Like, that was insane. But, yeah, no, I mean, driving, I definitely think, especially when it's that long of a haul, put you in an interesting place, and then you're worried about different things all day. Like, I'm worried about where are my keys, do I have enough money to get gas on the way back, et cetera, et cetera. So your mind's a billion different places, but I'd hate to blame it on that. I just played like dog shit.
That's fair. I want to throw something else out here as well. Like Dave won, so he doesn't have to go to a PTQ for a while, but I know, like, the next few weeks, you know, because of A, going to so many this month, and B, because of, you know, like, travel plans in July. Like, I think the other part of that, too, is, like I felt on Saturday, like, okay, I'm not winning this. I'm good for a little bit. So now I need to – I'm not going to go to an event for a few weeks. Like, I'm going to go to the pre-release from 14, but I'm not going to go to a PTQ again for a few weeks. Like, I think the other part of not getting burnt out and fatigued is, like, okay, you know what? This is going to be fun if I go. Like, I'm not going to enjoy myself, and I'm gonna play bad because of that. So, breaks, exactly, Morgan.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I did, you know, this weekend. You know, I know that I had been, you know, doing back-to-back Magic events and being busy on my Saturdays, which usually is an issue because I don't have plans on Saturdays. Usually my girlfriend works. But, you know, this weekend we had the opportunity where we both had the weekend off, and I just didn't, you know, I don't want to say, like, squander it, but I didn't want to let it go to waste.
Nice.
I didn't want to let it go to waste. I didn't want to let it go, you know, to waste and not spend time with her. So, I mean, that was kind of my break. And now, you know, I guess me and Mike are going in cycles, because now I'm ready, and there's, like, nothing for like, 2 weeks.
There's fireworks tomorrow, right?
I mean, there are Ooh. Fireworks technically tomorrow, but I'm not going down there. God. But I think, yeah, definitely, if you're a grinder, if you're just, like, a grinder, like, you know, we sort of are, like, breaks might be needed. I don't know how easy it is necessarily to get breaks when you're, you know, being highly competitive, but it is what it is, but I think it's important. So let's go ahead. We'll kind of slide back in. We want to do the question quickly after that just because it was, you know, very relevant. But we want to kind of slide back in here because we had, you know, a relatively big, big GP. It was GP Miami run by good old Star City Games. And I didn't get to watch a whole lot of it. I don't think any of us really did, but I do know that it was, as far as that's concerned, a really efficiently run tournament. It was done, like, late afternoon on Sunday, which is...
Yeah, like, they were done quick. Like,
they were
like, oh,
done
topic.
Super
oh,
quick. Yeah, it was just over, and I was just like, oh, okay. Like, it was done before, you know, most of the time, like, their legacy days are over. on Sunday. You know, Star City, you know, you can say that they hike prices and all that BS, but they know how to run a tight ship. I will give you that. As far as that's concerned.
I've heard that Reed Duke was bitch slapping people up the top eight as well. So
it was just amazing. He's just like, you're done. Game over. I win.
He's the Dave Nolan of GP Miami.
But let's be fair. I think we can all agree that it was Reed Duke's time. Like, I have to say that all the pro players, that he's probably my favorite as far as that's concerned. If you can have a magic idol, I would have to say that Reed Duke's probably my magic idol. Has nothing to do with him being dreamy, but definitely has everything to do with him being just ingenuine, just a nice guy from everyone that has ever talked about him and everything like that. Genuinely a nice person. Even helped push someone's car that was stalled out while taking pictures of him for the magic, daily MTG article and the Star City Games during his photo shoot. He was like, let me help you push this stalled vehicle out of the way. Just an amazing individual. And I feel that he definitely deserves the win at GP Miami as far as that's concerned. And he favored it.
He deserves the win because he was a good guy?
Yeah.
I helped someone leave a couch randomly this last week. Where was my, GP win?
Oh, no, Mike, you missed the point where he's good at magic and a good person.
Oh, yeah. Shrine of Fire. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, he definitely was on a heater. He did beat Brad Nelson twice, which is really funny too.
Bard Nelson.
Yeah, I didn't get to see any of the coverage of the GP, but I heard those matches were just insane.
Oh no,
they were. They were good.
Was nuts. Brad definitely made a couple of misplays in game three. The game two of the round of four was insane. Curse of Death Hold?
Yeah.
If you play any version of the Aristocrats and your opponent plays Curse of Death Hold, you might as well just scoop. Like, there's actually 0 point. It shuts off. Like, you have to play a Lingering Souls to trigger Morbid. It's pretty much the only thing you do.
Yeah, it's pretty miserable. I've done that to an Aristocrats player, and it feels real good.
Oh, yeah. When he's plus one in sword and just kind of looking at you, and you're like, yep.
Like,
sure, bro. And it's pretty great. But Reed looked really good in all those games. The final match wasn't even close. It didn't feel...
No, it was really poor. I actually really wanted to talk about that one, being a reanimator player myself. Just a player... I don't understand how... Because typically... With Junk Reanimator, Jund is a good matchup against you. And it goes back and forth. But this Reanimator player did not have a single Sever the Bloodline in his entire 75, which I feel is a huge mistake. Because you need to kill Olivia. Like, you can't let her live. You can't. It'll take over the game if you don't have a way to deal with her. You can't be like, Angel's Serenity her. It's just like, that's a 7... mana answer to their 4-drop. Like, you need to have an answer for it. And for the sheer fact that he just thought that he could get by with, like, Garrick Relentless, it's like, I just don't... I mean, obviously, he was in the finals. You know, he must have slid by. I'm sure there was plenty of Jund presence there, but it just seems like such a... I'm sure it was a decision that he had made as a sacrifice to the aggro decks that he was maybe expecting, but, man, that's huge. That I felt like that just made the game like cakewalk for Reed as far as that goes.
Board Tristani in?
Yeah.
He boarded Tristani in, but he likely boarded Tristani in due to him boarding Voices in, which, a questionable decision as well, But, I'm sure he was hinging on the benefit of, having these giant tokens, potentially, and just having that, but, yeah, I think that he was a bit, I don't think that he has a lot of stuff for Jund. Like, just, I don't think that he felt that his game one plan of just, reanimating big guys was going to be enough, but it just wasn't. Like, it wasn't even close.
Reduke had access to all 4 ground seals, so, I mean, you definitely have to go mid-range, I guess, but.
Yeah.
And all 4 ground seals. Oh my god.
Yeah. Then the mulches and, like, the grizzly salvages for his Reed's opponent also just missed.
Yeah, that's true. They were pretty terrible.
His first mulch was like Arbor Elf, Resto, Grizzly Salvage. And it was just like, whoa, you just knew he lost, because your 4 'cause your 4 cards like down in your deck and you saw nothing. Like, that's not where you want to be. Reed also played around literally everything that he should have been playing around. He had five mana open, and he had an Olivia in hand, and he was like, pass the turn, which was insane. Like, he had to know his opponent had the Garruk in hand. Like, ah! So, like, I was just geeking out as the Jund player. Well, was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, and then, like, he even, in another game, played the Olivia on turn four because his reanimator player, milled over a Garruk.
Right.
And, he was like, well, you either have the Garruk, but, I mean, your chances are so slight that you actually have it. So he just, like, you know, we just played it on turn four, and, like, there's just no answer. And it's like, if you have Sever the Bloodline in your deck list, the Jund player doesn't make that play. I don't think the Jund player makes that play because you have more answers. Like,
right.
It's still a good play. Like, it's still, like, fine. One of my answers is clearly gone, but I still have X more that can still take out that creature. Like, the Jund player just can't make that risk with their card that wins them the game. But, like, when you make it so safe for that play, and you have no answers, and he's just gonna roll your face, like, it's just over. So, it's unfortunate to see a reanimator, you know, go. But I know myself that I'm probably gonna have to stop playing the deck. Like, with Scavenging News coming out, like, it just seems that there's all this hate that's out there, and Scavenging News is a good creature that's gonna get played in green decks. So I don't think that the reanimator can continue to exist. You know, once M14 comes out. So I'll probably head back to Jund in a heartbeat. So, Dave, I will need a lot of those cards back.
you got to switch over to four color, bro. It's worth that, man.
Scavenging News is good, maybe. Like, it's really good, obviously. But I don't know if it negates an entire strategy just by existing.
I mean, no. I don't know. I just... What would reanimator play to counteract that?
Like, what you're saying though, like, you're talking about the mana intensive early turns. Like, so your opponent is gonna leave green mana up and not cast spells because they're afraid of you reanimating stuff. And for example, Dave's list, like what he's advocating, I mean, his deck can still just go, you know, Reckoner into Huntmaster into Thragtusk into Angel Serenity. Like, he still just curves that without ever hitting his graveyard. And his opponent, who's supposed to be being aggressive, is like, well, I'll just leave my green mana on tap, not cast spells, because I'm afraid of it. You know, I feel like Scavenging Goose is good, but, like, I don't think it negates a strategy. I don't think it does that by itself.
Yeah,
I guess. I think things could just need to shift. And maybe 4-color is just the way to go.
I think with 4-color, if I was going to adapt the deck, post M14, I would just probably play more Abrupt Decays just to deal with the Scavenging Oozes. But yeah, I mean, it's not as reliant on the graveyard as Junk Reanimator or some of the other like crazy lists that are out there. So You can definitely win just by grinding them out, you know, just by playing guys, basically.
Right. Yeah, I could definitely see that. And if I feel bad switching over to 4-color list because I have to take all my cards back.
I don't need to play any more PTQs, so...
Oh, yeah, that's true. I guess I'll be getting yours back. it's definitely a consideration. I still think Jund, you know, if... You know, this kind of rolls into our next subject, which is obviously M14 being very very close to what's coming out. And, you know, this is a great thing to talk about. Blast, obviously, for us, spoiler season is just begun. We are about 2 days in, and we already had a bunch of cards that have been spoiled already, such as Scavenging Ooze, and we definitely wanted to kind of discuss what we've seen so far, and then what we kind of think the metagame's shifting to. So, let's go ahead and kind of get into that. So, the cards so far that have been spoiled during spoiler season haven't been necessarily too impressive, at least for spoiler week, I should say. What do you guys think? What have you kind of seen that's notable that you might want to bring up?
This set feels a lot more, like, as far as a set, like, the limited format looks fun, but it looks a lot more casually than, you know, it's a lot more, I think, casually set up than anything else. Like, there's a lot of cards that look like really close to being playable and then just being bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, these four drop rares, like each planeswalker has their own little buddy. You know what I mean? Like, the Liliana's Reaver or Johnny's Chosen and stuff. And it's just like, oh, well, you're close, but I don't think you're good enough. So they're gonna open up and play him unlimited, and then never see play again. So.
Yeah, I think so. No, I mean, there's a lot of speculation on Theros being a very enchantment heavy block as far as that's concerned.
There's definitely some stuff to suggest that here. I would agree. You know, there's definitely little hints.
Yeah, like Johnny's Chosen. A lot of you bring up that card, but I mean, like, a lot of people are pointing at that card and being like, "Well, you know, when you look at that card, that leans heavily on enchantments and especially aura enchantments." And then we even get like Oromancer back. Like, we're getting some interesting hints in this set as far as that's concerned. And we've even gotten some hints back in RCR block to, you know, heavy enchantment sort of play. Ethereal, yeah. So I think it's safe to say, you know, speculatively, that Theros is probably going to be pretty heavy on enchantments as far as that's concerned. So it's hard to you know, obviously evaluate the good of the cards that we have now based on pure speculation, so we won't do that. But I think you're right. I definitely agree with it. It's just being very, very kind of casually. There's obviously cards in here that are printed just to sell packs.
Right.
You know, Scavenging Ooze and Mutavault being, you know, those cards. And it's still heavily rumored, though not confirmed, and at this point in time, getting less and less likelier that Thoughtseize is going to be reprinted in 14. I'm still holding out hope so much, because I need them so bad. But it is looking rather unlikely, but that would be huge for the set. Now, another huge thing that's coming back that everyone kind of knows about is Slivers. Now, we definitely want to talk a lot about Slivers, but we just have a few more cards I want to kind of bring up. So, new Chandra, Pyromaster. So, for people who haven't seen her yet, it is 2 red-red. And it's Planeswalker Chandra, obviously. She starts off with 4 loyalty, and her plus 1 is very similar to her initial one, the one that was in the last copy that came out. So it's
Firebrand.
Firebrand. Thank you, Mike. I knew. I could
save back yourself there. On that one.
So she is. She deals 1 damage to target player and 1 damage to up to 1 target creature that player controls. So, no matter what, she can still ping a player. Now the second ability is a 0 ability, so that's pretty interesting. We don't necessarily get a whole lot of planeswalkers that have 0 abilities. But it's exile the top card of your library. You may play it this turn. So, not for free, you still have to pay it. But, you know, kind of interesting. Sort of kind of card draw. And I think that's why a lot of people are kind of looking at her. And then the last one is a -7, so this is her ultimate. And it's exile the top 10 cards of your library. Choose an instant or sorcery card exiled this way and copy it 3 times. You may cast the copies without paying their mana costs. So that's pretty intense. I mean, who doesn't like taking, you know, 6 extra turns?
No, I have a question, though. It says copy it 3 times. Usually spells like that say you can choose new targets for the copy. Is that not the case with Chandra?
I'm assuming that is the case, but that's a good point.
Yeah, that is something that
reverberate specifies.
You may choose new targets for each copy.
Yeah.
I think that you would choose, because you'd be copying it, because you're not exactly, I think you, since you're copying it off of an exile, I think you would choose new targets for each.
Yeah, copy. Actually, no, okay, that's important. So you're not copying an original spell.
Mm-hmm.
Each spell is its own spell, so you don't have to. You don't have to say that. That's
what you don't have to specify.
Okay.
Right.
But I mean, that's definitely something to know.
I don't know. Are there any other cards like that? That's kind of weird that now you bring it up.
Yeah, it's unique. I mean, there's
you reveal the top 10. You know, like yeah, as opposed to exile or like because typically cards like that go reveal the top 10 cards of your library, choose an instant or sorcery, copy it 3 times. You may choose new targets for each copy, then exile these cards. After you've done this, is usually how things like that are worded.
Right. But see, like, usually, like, with, what you call it?
Usually
like,
the copy's already on the stack, though.
Yeah, usually, yeah, you copy something.
Okay, like, I mean, that's true.
Yeah. So that's probably why that is the way that it is, as far as that, is concerned. But I mean, I don't know. She's interesting, and I'm glad
like
they're going new places with Planeswalkers, and they're doing things that we haven't done. I mean, now, I've seen people that are like, would she be better if it was red-red 1, and then her 0 ability was -2 ability? I've seen people put that out there. But that seems...
See, that's an exercise in
future. Card design. Yeah.
It's here, the card's here, like, I think it's cool because, like, so if this is the last card in an aggro deck, for example, so this is your turn four with a Falter, it's kind of sweet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it also, like, I think it enables, like, control decks. Like, I still think the zero's a lot closer to draw a card than a lot of people are saying. Yeah, like, mm-hmm. They're like, oh, what if you hit a land? Well, then that's your land play for the turn. Like, you're getting right. card advantage in a red deck. So,
right.
and
that's very
and
true.
Her, I mean, I'm a big fan of Shadow of the Firebrand. Like anybody who knows me knows this is sadly true. but this ultimate feels a lot closer to, like, an end the game, like, ultimate than just, like, you know, Flame Wave essentially did. So, oh, I like her. I like her a lot.
Yeah, and I think that it'll be most certainly interesting. I feel like someone's gonna find a way to put her in a deck. I fully believe that for some reason. But yeah,
I'm not so sure about this one. But it seems like a worse Ralzarek.
That's true as well.
In a way,
yeah.
mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean,
comparison to Ralzarek that well. Like, I understand, like, you're saying, like, you can tap and, like, put a blocker down, but, like, Ralzarek, I don't know. I think they're so different. I don't see the comparison.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely do different things, but, like, I don't know. Like Ralzarek isn't widely played. You know, it's played in, like, one deck in Standard right now.
Legacy Stasis, buddy.
I'm not sure. Well, I guess we'll see. It seems like they're just scaling back Planeswalkers in general.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. I mean, and we also have new Garrick, as far as that goes, and I don't think we've talked about him on the podcast yet, so he's pretty interesting. So he costs six. He's four colorless green, and his plus one ability is reveal the top five cards of your library and put all creature cards revealed this way into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library. So he's just a lead the stampede. And then we look at his minus three ability. So his next ability is you may put a green creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. So that's kind of his protection now, as far as that goes. And then the last one is a minus seven. So his ultimate, you get an emblem with whenever you cast a creature spell, you may search your library for a creature card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library, which is insane. But it's an ultimate, so we can't evaluate a planeswalker on that.
I don't think that's a good, the card's interesting, but I see this being played in Commander a lot more than I do Standard.
I agree, yeah, 100%, 100%. I mean, I definitely wanted, you think about it, and you're like, oh man, like, a lot of those things seem kind of fun. But I think you're more accurate. I mean, if there is a 6-drop mythic that I'm gonna be more concerned about playing in this set, it is most certainly Primeval Bounty. as far as that goes, I think that card is insane. I know you can't really evaluate from playing Duels of the Planeswalkers, but I swear to you that every time that I've had that enchantment on the battlefield in that game, can't lose. You just can't. It's impossible. And maybe it's because they're not playing constructed Standard decks, but I don't care. You still can't lose. Because you're just like, oh, I'll just play this, and if they let me untap, then I just win, right? That's kind of what it is. And if you guys don't know Primeval Bounty, it's 5 and green. It's an enchantment. Whenever you cast a creature spell, you put a 3/3 beast token onto the battlefield. If you cast a non-creature spell, you get 3/1/1 counters on target creature you control. And whenever a land enters the battlefield, you under your control, you gain 3 life. Like, there's just no downside to this.
That's what I want my 6-drop to do, is gain 3 life.
I mean, clearly. Who doesn't want that? I'm not saying that it's going to be constructed playable. I'm just saying it feels real good to play it.
I wouldn't doubt that at all. I mean, I think constructed playable-wise, like, I like Savage Summoning.
I mean, there's got to be some way to get a creature into play, and, you know, sometimes you just want to pay a little bit extra, but, I mean, you definitely get enough out of it, as far as that goes.
There was a card before, there was an uncommon, it was in the last core set, I don't remember the name of it. It's referred to it a few times, like, yeah, the next spell you play can't be countered by, like, blue, or, it's like, blue spells. Thank you, Autumn's Veil. And that's all a fair amount of play when it was in Standard, so I don't see why this card wouldn't, because Flash is a big game, so.
That's true.
The problem with cards like that, though, is, like, you have to spend a card.
Oh, absolutely. Effect.
Whereas, like, Cavern of Souls is just, like...
We won't have Cavern of Souls anymore.
For a couple months, you know.
We'll have for a little bit.
But I'm just saying, I'm just saying, the reason why Cavern of Souls is an awesome card is because you just tack on. It's like,
it's almost... It's a landslide. It's insane.
Yes. So, I don't know. I guess
Yeah, we'll definitely see as far, you know, when this set kind of hits. I kind of want to see everything else. I hate that we're kind of doing this on a Tuesday and we don't have the full set to really talk about, but, you know, that's definitely something we can talk about next week and get everyone in preparation for.
That's how stupid we were. We're like, oh, we made a oh, wait, look at this.
Exactly, but there's still plenty of hope in the set, in my opinion. I mean, it's a core set. There's only so much you can get out of it. It's just going to be what it is. Let's just all be happy. We're getting Doomblade back, guys. Oh, come on. God. Let's just bring it together.
Amen. There we
It'll
go.
Be fine.
Doomblade guys will be real happy.
Doomblade God is going to be pumped.
Yes.
What was that?
Dark Prophecy.
Dark Prophecy? I think it's too mana intensive for the Aristocrats decks to play, but if they could play it, oh man.
Cause, like, Dave, you and I talked about this a little bit. I think we're both in agreement that, like, I don't know, it's so... Like, it does nothing by itself. It literally actually does nothing.
Correct.
Right.
If we say a card does nothing, that one literally does nothing.
Actually, this was the topic of discussion at 3 a.m. on the car ride back from Louisville, so that Jordan didn't kill everybody.
Yes.
Because, like, I'm about to fall asleep, and then Dave, like, had to have read that, and it's the perfect time right before I fell asleep. I was like, so what do you think about the spoilers? And I was just like, you're the man, Dave. You're the man. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't think this card's actually good, but I just saw triple black enchantment. I'm like, ooh, what's this? Oh, wait. Okay.
Not Necropotence, sorry.
Never mind.
Never mind. Yeah, I mean, I feel like if the Aristocrats deck could pull that off, they might want it, but maybe. I don't know. Card advantage.
Every
draw
time
a lot
we
cards.
See the test in our group, they go, I can't draw lands. So I don't know how drawing three black sources would be, but it would be sweet, I guess. I mean, like, have a Blood Artist in play, and then, like, Blasphemous Act, and be like, okay, lose 10, I'll gain 10, and then lose 10 and draw 10 cards, so.
Yeah. Seems maybe like a win more.
Maybe. Just a little.
Maybe a little bit, yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. I don't think it's very playable, but it's interesting. I'd rather them, you know, get the cost right for that enchantment, that is going to be coming out. Due to the make your card.
That card's terrible. That card's just so bad.
But no hope. No hope for Mike.
So Slivers?
Okay. We'll move on to Slivers, because this is exciting, and this is something that me and Mike talked about a little bit, that could be a potentiality. Turns out it is going to be 5 colors for Slivers, so that's awesome. A lot of people were worried that it was just going to be Naya, but it actually is going to be all 5 colors represented. Blue and black might not have as much as the Naya shard does, but they're still there. There's a new 1 blue sliver that is a 1/1 that gives all your slivers flying, and then a black sliver that actually gives all your dudes lifelink.
Yeah, that seems so, like, colored, like, odd. I was like, oh, alright, that's the black
one. It is a bit weird, but lifelink does bleed into...
No, it definitely does. And just, like, for a corset, that seems so, like,
yeah,
edgy on the color block. I'm like, whoa, Mero was okay with this? Like, all right.
I mean, that's...
Anybody notice that the blue one is a rare, too?
Well, they said that blue and black only get rares. They said the blue and black only get rares.
Yeah.
So they're going to be in all 5 colors, but you won't get any common or uncommon ones in blue and black.
Right.
Yeah, Wingcrafters are rare.
Hey, it's a little bit better than Wingcrafter.
Yeah, when you have 3 guys. When you have 2 guys, it's a Wingcrafter.
That's true. I will give you that. But it could be better than Wingcrafter. It has the potential to be better than Wingcrafter.
So the mission is this, Dave. You're going to a modern Pro Tour. And in that Pro Tour, you could potentially play a list that has 4 Cavern Souls, 4 Ancient Ziggurats, 4 Aether Vials, and then Slivers.
Forgot about Aether Vial.
What?
I forgot about Aether Vial.
Yeah.
It is in Modern, isn't it?
That's there too. So you get to play, there's a green, in the core set, there's a green one that is a Crusade effect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember the Predatory Sliver. Then you have Sinew Sliver, which I think is a white one. And then you have Sedge Sliver from Time Spiral, which if you control Swamp, all of them get +1/+1 and Black Regenerate.
Oh, baby.
Yeah.
I like the way this is going.
So, and then, like, all these weird ones from Time Spiral Block give you all your sideboard tech. Like, you have Vindicate, you have Naturalize, all the effects attached to Slivers. So, I think this is what you should play. Little old school hooks.
I'll consider it. But we'll see.
Come on, I just want to, like, see people's faces when you're like, cavern, sliver, and they're like, god damn it.
Someone did it. Someone actually did it.
Like, sir, this is the Pro Tour. Have some respect.
Yeah. At the last Pro Tour I played in, which was in Amsterdam, was extended, and I definitely played against a turn one, what's the new Goblin Lackey guy that they printed with Double Strike?
Warren Skitters, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I played against that. That was a thing. So, who knows? Who knows? Maybe Slivers will be that good. Who knows?
For our listeners, what's a Warren Instigator?
Oh, okay. Warren Instigator, what is it? It's red for a 1-1 double strike, and then whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you may put a goblin card from your hand into play.
And that was mythic, right?
It was mythic.
Yes.
Okay. So for our listeners, did people like that card?
Evan Irwin definitely liked it. I remember
that's okay. Like, he likes everything though. Let's
preview
let's
that card.
There.
And he said, "Yeah, but no. I mean, it never really saw much play. But you know, there was some crazy goblin decks that tried to turn one that guy.
I know. I've definitely seen Cedric Phillips play that card in Legacy Goblins.
Legacy like in Standard when it was around. Like the only other goblin like it was really really played was Goblin Guide, and like that was play on turn one.
That was what you would play on turn one.
So, yeah, it was kind of awkward. But, yeah, let's play Legacy.
Oh, yeah.
All the lackey effects.
So good.
But, yeah.
So, moral of the story, though, Dave, Slivers, get on.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's do this.
All right, I'm getting on it.
Let's make this dream happen. All right.
Oh, my gosh. You know that? Your instep bump is a miracle. Okay? So, don't abuse it. Don't abuse pancakes at IHOP. You're going to ruin the magic.
Oh my god, do they have, they don't have IHOPs in Ireland, what are you gonna do?
Oh my god, what am I gonna do?
We gotta bring enough to make it. Sure, I need 60 pancakes. So, I'm sorry.
Well, in a briefcase.
I estimate 40 are gonna go bad, and I need 10 for each day. So, let's go. Cause they decay at different rates, I understand there's a loophole in the story, just let it go.
I wanna see the bin of pancakes go through, like, customs, right? So it's like, sir, what's in this bag? Pancakes.
Sir, for real, what's in the bag? I'm not lying, pancakes!
They're delicious.
It's actually pancakes.
You know what, the NSA already knows that he's going to be bringing pancakes, so he'll get through fine.
There you go, yeah.
I don't even think we've actually come to the hard part of this, the syrup. Because you have to put them in those little 3-ounce bottles, right?
Oh, jeez.
They have syrup in Ireland.
You don't know
sure
that.
They do.
I know they have potato pancakes, because they have potato everything.
All right, clearly.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we just lost the Irish bracket there. Right?
Hey,
there.
Hey,
well, they're all gone now.
I'm Irish. It's okay. I'm allowed.
Well,
to.
So am I, sir.
So there you go.
We're all Irish. We had determined this, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well, not on the podcast.
I am mostly Irish. It's just a lot of other things too.
We got a half
a lot of
your
things
first.
Too.
Yeah. I think I'm like a quarter Irish.
That's
but,
fine.
You know,
well, you're
yeah,
a quarter of a person.
I have an Irish last name. It's fine.
Yeah, you're fine.
No problem. That was my failed attempt at an Irish.
Yeah, don't do that again.
All right, well, I think we're good for right now with spoilers. Obviously, there's definitely a lot of good things that are going on for us as a group, and it's definitely exciting to see, you know, one of the people that have been on this podcast to be, you know, pretty successful as far as that's concerned. And we're all very excited, and we're all going to get them in Pro Tour shape as far as that goes. And...
oh man, the Dave Nolan montage.
I know, it'll just be like fucking
Who got
Rocky.
The touch?
Like, we'll all come in and we'll all look like Mickey and we'll be like, you're bum!
I'll be doing one-handed push-ups in no time, don't worry about it.
It's so great because like the last Rocky was like considered a wash-up and like now we have to train Dave Nolan. Like,
right, exactly.
The self-proclaimed wash-up.
So you're comparing me to 60-year-old Sylvester Stallone?
I mean, yep, you're the 30-year-old magic player, 60-year-old Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah,
about equivalent. I listened to last week's podcast. You were just as difficult to understand as he is.
Did you see that way of playing magic, man?
Oh, man.
That's what I heard last week.
Oh,
hey man, I didn't have a headset.
So much better. It's so much better now. No, it'd be awesome. We'll film it for our listeners so they will know what we look like, and then we can all all three of us will dress up like Mickey, and then you'll just dress up like Rocky. It'll be awesome.
I would actually do that if you want
to
do that. So
I feel like we should. I think we owe it to our listeners.
We should do that. That would be awesome. Actually,
yeah, we're gonna do that. If you guys would want to see something like that, viewers, like.
Who's gonna do that? The one guy?
So you have to ask him. You have to pitch it to him, and then they have to respond. Hey,
that's true. No, they don't actually. They're
gonna
go
on Twitter account and then just be like, "I love it. It's awesome."
Jordan, it's okay. We'll just do it anyway. It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, no matter what.
Your fake Twitter account is a chick. Like that's what it was. Like your fake Twitter account definitely was like a prepubescent girl.
Yeah, isn't that what Jordan is on the inside?
Oh.
Wow. What? So a lot of women with that statement. Anyway, we probably should. What is everybody's goals for this week?
All right. Well, I don't think there's anything really going on. This is kind of the lull, as far as that's concerned.
America week.
It is the 4th of July, obviously. So yeah. Most of us are either traveling or have engagements, as far as that goes. So I don't think
that
there's...
I'm going to redneck it up. So
well, I'm
proud
of you.
No shaking, lots of drinking. Like, I'll come back speaking like Wolf when we come back next week.
Sounds amazing. It's awesome. You'll have a lot in common with the new...
the Huntmaster himself.
Oh, no,
okay. Oh. I got you.
Yeah, that too. The Witch Hunter, if you will.
Yes. Oh, God.
What? That card's going to see play. We all know it.
That makes me sad.
Witch Stalker, excuse me. I didn't want someone to yell at me. Our invisible listeners. No, we do have listeners. I shit you not. Because I got an email from them. We got our first listener email, guys.
Oh, yeah, this is nice.
Who isn't excited? It was actually from one of the guys that worked with the TO at the PTQ we discussed in Canton. And he just said that he really enjoyed us, you know, talking about it. So definitely want to give a shout-out to Kevin Johnson. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. You might be one of three listeners besides us that actually listen to the podcast. And thank you. Keep listening. Keep spreading the word. And, you know, hopefully there'll be more than three of you. But we'll always know that you are our first.
Oh, you know what? Morgan, you can never make a joke about people not listening again because we just learned a week ago you don't listen to the show.
Yeah, Jesus.
Listen, I'm a busy adult with many important things to do.
Like, podcast from 8 until 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night. Yeah, I'm wrapped up, man.
I've gotten better at it, all right? I've listened. I just hadn't until that point. Don't call me out on this goddamn podcast.
Yeah, I know this is the awkward lull. I kind of want to do well at FNM just so I can, like, win a match once in the past 3 weeks. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I think I've won two matches in the past 3 weeks of Magic, and it's just like, oh my gosh, it's that kind of day. So,
yeah,
it's actually
lucky
for you. I heard Dave is actually starting classes up, so.
Oh, no, die. And a fire.
Come on,
like, sure.
It'll probably just be a, you know, an FNM week for most of us that aren't out of town. But I mean, other than that, there really isn't anything going on local that's a big tournament. I don't think there. I mean, next week, the week after this is M13 pre-release, so that's obviously something that we'll be doing. Me and Jordan have already committed to be on a team. So
me and the wifey.
Oh, that's awesome! That's so,
are you just doing the midnight?
So, yeah, we're doing the midnight.
Sick!
Oh man, so exciting!
Dave, get you and your wife to do it.
You and your wife, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
She doesn't play Magic, so that would be difficult.
Well, Dave, we'll find you a partner.
Okay.
What, are we like out, man. For two-headed giant partners?
Yeah, just we'll put on Craigslist.
Pro tour player wants.
That'll be interesting. Yeah.
Pro tour player seeking
two-headed giant partner.
Two-headed giant
partner. Guy show up with like, this really kinky like rubber suit on and be like, "So I'm here for two-headed giant."
And then Dave's just like, "Eh, fuck it, whatever, sure."
On that note, I will go ahead and say, thank you for listening again to At Your End Step, and we'll catch you next week.